everyone, and welcome to Weekly Advice from Everyday Experts, a podcast from hubpages.com in which we discuss really interesting hubs or articles on our site. I'm Simone Smith, and I'm sitting here with Marina, and we're getting ready for a company tradition, actually.
Yes, hello everyone. We are getting ready for a big gift exchange here at hubpages headquarters. And what are we doing this year, Simone? Is it White Elephant?
We are doing White Elephant again. Boy.
It's because we don't really know what each of us likes, so try to embarrass all of us at the same time.
Yeah, so if you haven't heard of it before, White Elephant is a form of gift exchange. Unlike Secret Santa, you don't get someone that you choose a gift for. You just bring a gift. Typically, the gift is either funny or embarrassing.
Yes.
Or really stupid.
They're usually gag gifts with a upward max on how much each person is allowed to spend, but if last year is any indication for how we handle it at HubPages, there is a nice little balance of really cool gifts, like the painting that I brought in, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And really, really obnoxious gifts that
like
included
boxes full of
a dude farting on a toilet, for example.
Oh, God!
And that actually you had to listen through for most of the first half of 2011.
That was used as a torture device against me.
New year, new torture device.
Oh, and it would make those... Okay, yes. But the way that White Elephant works is everyone gets a number, and the first person is the
first and last person to pick. Basically, all the gifts are placed in the center of the room, hopefully all disguised and wrapped up so it's unclear who brought what.
Yes.
And then everybody picks a number. The number establishes the order by which you pick the gifts from the middle. And if you're number one, you pick the first one, but it also means you get to go all the way at the end and trade whatever gift you have at that point in time with whatever gift you want. So it's the best number to have, pretty much.
And then number two, you open your gift and then choose whether or not you want to trade with number one or keep your own, and so
yes.
on and so forth.
Basically, the first number is the best number to have, the second number is the worst number to have, because you only get one person to switch with if you were unhappy with your gift.
And it still sucks to be in the middle numbers, because you could at any point lose the cool gift that you
yes.
get. So honestly, like, once you're in the middle, there's like this whole, it's a game of strategy, because you can't choose the best gift because you will obviously lose it.
Yes.
You have to choose something that you kind of like you're okay with, but you don't think other people will take from you. Crying
exactly.
doesn't always work. I think that I fake cried when someone took socks away from me. Totally didn't stop.
I tried to just kind of hide. Well, actually, my first, I had number one last year, and I got a gift that I didn't really want. so I just kind of let it be on display, but people avoided it. The middle strategy is a good strategy there, Simone. I haven't thought about it that way. Pick unassuming gifts. Pick
gifts and considering how everyone in the office is sick now, all you have to do is, like, cough on it.
Oh,
people are
going to
be like,
brilliant.
Ooh, not going to take that. Yeah, that's my strategy this time. If I get anything decent, I'm just going to be like...
One other really funny strategy is to just bring your gift beautifully wrapped. Just to
get
people
do that all the time.
She's
like this.
You open it, it's like adult diapers.
Yeah.
Which, I almost brought as my gift.
Darn it,
you
should have. That would be great. Next year.
Next year.
But anyway, what we're talking about today is gift giving during holidays. Not just Christmas, but holidays in general. Because, I mean, it's one of the most stressful things about this holiday. It's also one of the most enjoyable things about this holiday. Everyone seems to have a love-hate relationship with gifts, whether they're giving them or receiving them. So we're going to take a look at that history and maybe try to discover why it is we do this and how we can deal with it.
Why must we give each other presents?
Why?
And why is it stressful? Well... Let's start, shall we?
Let us indeed. In a really nice sort of introductory hub, we're going to touch on a bunch of different hubs in this one because this is a big issue, okay? it's called Gift Giving, Gift Ideas and Traditions of Giving by Rosemary Crane. And in this hub, in which she actually sort of discusses a bunch of other gift-related hubs.
And links to pretty much all of the best gift guides.
Yeah, it's a hub mob roundup.
You can find on hub pages.
Yeah, because we got together for a week and everyone wrote about gifts and she like discussed all those and linked
That's
to them.
It's a great resource.
It is a great resource. And she talks in the intro to this hub about how gift giving, at least as a European tradition, goes way back to the Middle Ages, at least in a sort of formalized, well-documented way. And she talked about how European rulers gave gifts to bolster loyalty amongst their subjects, how Christians gifted land, money, and luxury items to the church in exchange for prayers, which, if I remember correctly, those were indulgences, right?
Indulgences, yes. Yes. Haven't heard that word since junior year of high school, but yep.
AP history.
Indulgences.
And scholars gave rulers manuscripts, hoping to get some favor with them. And then, of course, there were wedding anniversary gifts, and this was the age in which they started to be given, you know, precious metals, this and that, something different for every year.
What's interesting is that most of these, and, well, perhaps even the wedding anniversary ones, which is one I thought might be the outlier, but they're all gift-giving in exchange for something tied
really
to some reciprocal act.
Here, right? I mean, it's all about garnering favor in some ways. I mean, we'll discuss a little difference to that at the very end of this podcast. But, yeah, to be honest, like, gifts are all about reciprocity.
Yeah.
And that's one reason, I think, why we have a love-hate relationship with them. But obviously the biggest gift-giving holiday, I would say, in the world. I think that's fair. Especially because it's kind of headed up by America, and America is the number one consumer.
What were we going to say?
Christmas is the biggest gift-giving holiday.
Yeah, and just it's not even the idea that we look at it as one day anymore. It's just this period from Thanksgiving through even after the New Year that's just like crazy consumer, you know,
exactly.
Sales all over the place.
Yep.
I noticed last year, for example, they were asking me if I wanted my gifts or my things that I bought to be wrapped and gift wrapped after Christmas. And I was like, you know, I was just kind of surprised because I remember when they would run out of gift boxes, you know, if you were last minute shopping. So it's kind of extended and like taken over this.
Well, because it's such a lucrative time, right?
Period.
I mean,
and
you can get people to buy more. You're going to encourage them to do
so. It's definitely a great thing for businesses and retailers.
Yeah, no kidding. But interestingly, it wasn't, you know, the Native Americans who decided to create this grand tradition. No, it was not.
It was the Pilgrims.
Not the Pilgrims. It was the Romans. I mean, come on.
Ah.
They were such pioneers. Their whole bathing thing, goats. Just like, they knew what they were doing. They had awesome baths and they gave gifts to each other. Specifically on Saturnalia, which was a holiday that took place in December that was really more a celebration of revelry and things being turned on their heads, you know, like the masters pretended to be slaves and the slaves pretended to be masters and people gave gifts to each other and it was crazy. So there were December gift-giving practices for a very, very long time,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess kind of got forgotten with the Romans for a while. But I don't think Saturnalia was, it still had its little, and this is, I feel like Christmas is a big snowball, right? Like, it started out as, like, a couple different things, and they start bunching together and getting a little bit morphed, and then winter gift-giving was still kind of around, but it I guess, rebooted in the High Middle Ages.
Rebooted.
Yeah, but they were for New Year's Day instead of, like, the month of December, and it was mostly between people in legal relationships, so I guess if you worked together or if you were, like, a tenant or a landlord, that's when you would exchange gifts. And I think that is similar to what R.M. Crane talked about in her hub about how rulers would give people land to be like, hey, don't try to overthrow me.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting as well. That she, well, at least in this hub, the idea that gifts being exchanged on New Year's Day, I mean, it wasn't mentioned in this hub, but I feel like part of that is related to what calendar the culture used and whether
this
or not.
This is true, yeah.
Because I know, for example, in Serbia, they still give gifts on New Year's Day. And it's not, you know, customary to exchange gifts between people you know or even family members. It's just like that's when St. Nicholas is going to show up and give kids presents. But it's just in no way tied to Christmas Day, which on the Serbian calendar is celebrated on January 7th. It's still like tied to the New Year. And I'm wondering if that relates all the way back to kind of this period of time and it just never changing.
It seems, it's like dates are pretty arbitrary. Maybe it's because it's cold and people are bored and unhappy and gifts help to distract us from our miserable lives. in the cold. It's true. And darkness.
It's kind of like we always have that as a backdrop.
Yeah.
Gift-giving in the holidays.
It keeps us busy, for sure. But then, the whole gift-giving and revelry thing, I think still, like, winter celebrations during that time, at least the formalized ones, were definitely more on the rowdy, get-drunk-and-party side.
Festive and celebratory and less about just that one act.
Yeah, and it was also, a little bit of Saturnalia still was kind of powerful in its influence, which involved a lot of, letting loose, which the Catholic Church was kind of like, we don't necessarily condone this. So they actually banned gift-giving during the Middle Ages, because they didn't want people to celebrate different pagan holidays and Saturnalia. But then later on, they were like, oh, well, actually, gifts are totally okay. Because there was a growing association with St. Nicholas, who we'll talk about in a little bit. And also, they said, oh, well, this symbolizes the gifts of the three wise men, because they're awesome, and they gave gifts.
Oh, so, of course. There's something in it for us now, or some way we can explain it, so why not support it?
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't realize, did you know that, the original St. Nicholas was from the 4th century?
I did not. I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, I thought he was in the hundreds of something, the 1600s, 1400s, but...
He's been around for a while, evidently.
Yeah, but...
The feast day, I guess, is on December 6th.
Exactly, and that's when they used to give gifts.
And that's when many countries started doing it, so...
Yeah.
Interesting enough.
Cool guy. I mean, it's interesting that most of what he was known for was being generous and giving gifts and being kind to kids, and that was enough to...
Yep.
I mean, what a legacy to leave behind for just being a generally nice and generous guy.
Yeah,
I wish we had more people like that.
It's interesting, though, that is definitely one interpretation of that figure, and that's exactly the type of interpretation that I mentioned earlier stays in Serbia, whereas now there's, in America at least, that whole idea of, proving yourself to Santa Claus.
To be good.
Yeah, you have to be good in order to deserve the gifts.
Yeah.
And there's this whole evaluation process that takes place.
Just generous, benevolent.
That just became a little tool, I guess, of parents to bribe their kids.
But, I mean, kids are being just as crafty with their whole, I want this and that. So,
yes.
I mean, it's a battle. I think both people should be
able to I do like the idea that he was a generous, gift-giving, loving person that really liked children and didn't want to judge children.
No, he was just a nice guy. Of course, things changed with religion once the Reformation hit, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Martin Luther rolled in and said no.
Yeah,
so
he wouldn't have that. No more indulgences.
No more indulgences.
That was one form of gift-giving that became very uncool. But they did take gift-giving and add some more religion to it. Many Protestants, for example, changed the bringer of gifts from St. Nicholas to the Christ child.
Yeah.
Kris Kringle.
Yeah.
Which, in English, just ended up being Kris Kringle.
Yes.
I did not realize. I thought Kris Kringle was, just a funny name, for some guy named Chris.
I didn't know that was a formal change in name from St. Nicholas. That's pretty funny.
But isn't it weird? Because, I mean, Kris Kringle is one of those... It's like an earlier evolution of Santa, right? And so he's like a hybrid between Jesus and St. Nicholas. How strange is that?
He is. I don't know why... Why did you bring Jesus into it, though?
Because it's the Christ child.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yes. And then St. Nicholas.
Yeah. Because
Have you seen a picture of Kris Kringle?
Yeah.
I think that's something I'll have to do after this podcast.
I mean, of the bishop form, not of I mean, I wonder if they were the baby Jesus, is going to leave you some presents. I don't know. I'm really curious about this, and I'd be very interested to...
Yes.
We have to research this stuff.
It's
man.
True. And I guess that's when the Protestants at least changed it to the gift-giving day to Christmas Eve.
Yeah, to celebrate the birth of the Christ child. So, yeah, things keep getting moved around. Mm-hmm. So, we have, Saturnalia becoming banned, becoming okay to give gifts, but still now it's super Christian. And then we have Kris Kringle overtaking St. Nicholas. But then there was this still very Saturnalian figure called Father Christmas that re-emerged in 17th century England. So once again, we've got some more paganism, some more, ancient Roman practice. And it wasn't really until Victorian Britain that that Father Christmas was made over into more of the Kris Kringle person, where, you know, he was like a nice saint-like.
So he went from Kris Kringle, reformed to Father Christmas, and then back to Kris Kringle type figure.
It seems like these figures kind of merged together. Like, in England, they were like... Gesundheit. Oh,
thank you.
They were like, oh, they're talking about that Kris Kringle in Germany. Oh, he's kind of like Father Christmas. And eventually people were like, this is too confusing. They're all the same person.
Yep.
Okay. Move on. And then I guess...
They all wanted it to be the same person.
Yeah,
and it just took some
just
shifting and interpreting.
Yeah. And then I mean, it got even weirder in America. Like in some, I think in New Amsterdam, St. Nicholas was named the patron saint. And so he sort of got adopted there and just was more beloved as a character. But then he also got his holiday spin. And by 1822, I think that's where we got like the gift giver figure that we start to recognize in his modern form.
The night before Christmas.
Exactly. Yeah. Apparently by 1850, people were already starting to complain about commercialization. And I didn't realize that the shopping aspect of Christmas was already that intense by 1850.
Yeah.
But apparently it was because Harriet Beecher Stowe, in some book about, it's like a Christmas in New Hampshire, had one of the characters complaining about it, which blows my mind.
That's pretty hilarious. I mean, yeah, it's as soon as it became more than just that figure and more of like a cultural practice, then clearly retailers were able to make it into something bigger than just admiration or storytelling or, you know, gift giving in one direction from whatever the St. Nicholas figure is to the little children, and more
totally.
Of, you know, giving gifts to everybody that you're is in your family and that you're friends with.
But, I guess
but that
first,
is early.
Like, yeah, it's super early. Although I think at that point in, you know, the early like 1840s, 1850, the Santa still looked like a bishop. He still looked like this St. Nicholas
mm-hmm.
that was more popular in America at
mm-hmm.
that time. And it wasn't until Thomas Nast, the political cartoonist, who also is responsible for donkeys and elephants being Democrat and Republican, and for Uncle Sam, like so many, yeah. Like
yeah.
He was the one who really made the imagery into more of
Santa
this,
Claus.
Like, less religious guy, more of this, like, jolly elf. And I didn't know that it took him a while to do that, but apparently starting in 1863, he would draw a new Santa Claus every year, and then by the 1880s, he had, like, come up with the Santa Claus that we know and love so much. And pretty much soon thereafter, maybe in, like, the 1920s, the Santa as we know it was set in stone.
Set in stone.
No more changing.
And do you know if that was a change that Nast made again, or if that
I
was...
I think that it was when advertising companies started taking his, like, that outfit and that figure and making it, like, so widespread that it was pretty much the consensus
mm-hmm.
that this is what this guy looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... It's interesting.
It is interesting, and it's interesting that it kind of stopped there.
Yeah.
And there's not much emphasis
I think
on...
it stopped... In my opinion, it stopped with Coca-Cola. Because they're so influential and so powerful. And once they created that particular iteration...
Yeah.
Like, it was done. They're just too...
That's an interesting theory. It's definitely not something that you really see in any advertisements around the holiday time anymore. It's now simply, it's just very like product focused and it's just a given that this is part of our lives and that
of course, yeah.
The only time you really hear about Santa Claus is when little kids bring him up. But they're not, it's not as...
We've got some Santa Claus movies coming out. We've got one coming out this year.
I mean, just like a different, even like any other.
Oh, any other, yeah. Oh,
to,
yeah. There's
to
no
redefine.
Yet to change. No, well, it would be impossible.
It's pretty much.
It would be impossible. But I guess we have to get back to gift giving, right? So I think SS Marketing on HubPages wrote a pretty good hub talking about. It's called traditional Christmas, but SS Marketing talks about a lot of the gifts that are given, and in this hub, the commercialization of the gift-giving process is traced back to 1841, which was the first point at which a store used a Santa Claus to,
mm-hmm.
like, attract
lure children.
Kids.
Yes, yes.
So that parents would shop more. And that's also, wait, I mean, that's 1841.
That is...
There was that Harriet Beecher Stowe character complaining about Christmas by 1850. This is all super early.
Yeah.
Super early. I mean, And how old is America at this point? Like, how do you...
Not even 100 years.
Yeah, this is crazy. But there are also a couple other, like, gift-giving traditions that are mentioned that I thought were interesting. Like, poinsettias.
Poinsettias, yeah.
By Mr. Joel Poinsett.
Yes. I guess when he was named for U.S. Ambassador to Mexico, he brought the plants to the U.S. back in 1828. And since then, they were seen as a symbol of the Star of Bethlehem. The other one that was interesting that I did not know of was candy canes.
Yeah, oh, this was so cool.
Which were given to German children to keep them quiet in church, but they came to symbolize the Trinity of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
See, that's what another thing I see. I love that. It's the same thing with, like, gift giving and the Catholic Church being like, no, it's not okay. And then they're like, oh, well, it symbolizes.
But it symbolizes this.
Yeah, it totally symbolizes these things, so it's educational.
Ah, okay. Then it's all right.
Yes, that, we're cool.
Yes.
I think that's
great. We're already okay with that.
But see, that's just so interesting. You know, it's always like these weird parties thinking something's not okay and it is okay and now we're going to change its name and change the date, but it's all the same thing. It's giving gifts around
all
the times of the year.
Yes, and it's attaching meaning to those gifts in a way that makes everyone happy, I guess.
Yeah, Hanukkah is a good example of that, right?
Yes.
Temera, another hubber on Hub Pages, wrote a hub called Understanding Hanukkah for Non-Jews and mentions only at the very end the gift aspect of the holiday, basically just saying, well, kids started seeing other children getting presents around this time of year for Christmas and they wanted some, so then presents were built in to the process.
Yeah.
Like, you get one every day. But that was only once, you know, there's this peer pressure, you know, to start exchanging gifts at that time of the year. And I think the same thing happened with Kwanzaa, which structurally speaking is, you know, we've got candles that are being lit. It's a lot of it's based off of Hanukkah. So
yeah,
that got grandfathered in. It's like all these things are being built on to this institution. It's super cool.
It is. And it's kind of, at least the Hanukkah Christmas issue is an issue that most likely started in America as opposed to elsewhere where kids were in similar environments. So
yeah. Let's talk about some other gift-giving holidays that are popular worldwide.
Like Valentine's Day in Japan.
That day. Yeah, so this is a really good example of like a holiday that was first commercialized in America, but then meshed with other cultures and other countries to make even more interesting gift-giving processes.
I really like the idea of omiyage.
It's basically the practice of giving gifts in Japan, which happens a lot.
Yes, that's the general idea I got from the hub, Gift Giving in Japan, Japanese People and Their Gift-Giving Customs by Vig-san.
Vig-san. That's what I think it is.
In that, you know, people give gifts much more often. It's not necessarily, you know, holiday time. It's I'm traveling 20 kilometers to go visit this family member. I'm going to stop by a souvenir shop, get some things, and give it to people I care about when I get back. And they're smaller kind of gifts that I guess are easily shareable with a lot of people, like cookies
and like local
crackers,
treats. And, you know, like this cute little comb or something.
Yes.
I love omiyage. Oh my gosh.
And have you ever practiced omiyage?
Oh, all the time. Whenever I travel to Japan and I know I'm going to see people, have to bring something. Whenever you go somewhere, you'll often get little gifts, which is awesome. And when you travel to big cities around Japan or like go to tourist destinations like that other Japanese people go to, omiyage shops everywhere, just filled with local treats. It's really, I mean, it's an expensive and often wasteful process, but it's interesting to see just how often gift giving happens. And I think that gift giving around Christmas time in Japan is much more similar to like way back to Middle Ages feudal gift giving. It happens more in between just couples and like bosses and workers. And it's definitely more of like this omiyage thing. So it's interesting to see how this more traditional Japanese practice is applied to newer holidays that get introduced to the country. And Valentine's Day is my favorite instance of this. Because on Valentine's Day, it's very, very specific. All you give is chocolates, pretty much. And on Valentine's Day, only girls give chocolates to guys.
Interesting.
And then later on, down the line, is another holiday called White Day. And on this day, guys, if they choose to do so, will return the favor to girls. And that's their turn to give chocolate to girls.
I like that. Just to draw a little parallel again to Serbia, because that's where I'm from, there's some religious-based holiday that is the same kind of idea. There are 2 days, one for moms, one for dads, and it's when it's right around the holidays or in early January. Always falls on a Sunday, and the idea is that kids, basically, if they know that the holiday is that day, and it was difficult for me because I didn't pay attention to the dates, but my grandma would always tell me, and she'd be like, don't forget, it's this day, and you basically go and you pretend to trap your parents, and you can't let them go until they give you a gift. And so usually it was like $20 or some money, which when I was a kid was like,
that's a ton of money.
I'm rich today.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like a little switch that happens.
That is so cute.
Parallel to one another, yeah.
I love that holiday.
It's like parents flipping, or kids flipping things around on the parents.
That sounds like Saturnalia. Because Saturnalia was all about switching
masters
the roles.
And the slave. Yeah. Yeah, switching roles, exactly. So
Trends, all recurring.
But yeah, I really enjoyed reading that different kind of way that it's gift giving is celebrated in Japan.
Well, the holiday that you just described sounds like a reverse version of Mother's Day.
I know.
In America, or just like with Father's Day, where those are days where you give gifts to your parents. Yeah. So that's a different kind of thing. But what I thought was interesting, and I didn't know this before, and from a hub called Mother's Day Gift Giving, A History by Flower Delivery on Hub Pages, it wasn't meant to be a holiday necessarily just about like pampering mothers, which is how asked me, like, from another country, what is Mother's Day? Oh, well, Mother's Day and Father's Day are days for pampering a parent.
And it just seemed in a much more personal way, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like this global holiday about moms, but people just apply it to their own moms or their own situations, whereas it was
originally
meant to be a celebration of motherhood in general and its
and
relationship to world peace.
It was an anti-war holiday.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, and it sounds like there are two original, like, or two different versions of it. Like, in 1872, Julia Ward Howe created it as that anti-war celebration, and then later on, Ann Reeves Jarvis, and then later her daughter Anna, fought for another day celebrating mothers. That was the one that was signed into law in 1914 by Woodrow Wilson. But it's funny because, like, pretty soon after that, thanks to American companies, it became a gift-giving holiday, and Jarvis was really, really against it. She actually never became a mother herself, but spoke out against giving gifts on the holiday and was like, this is not the point. This is about mothers, not giving gifts. So it's weird.
It's about recognizing and appreciating what they've done, not just taking...
Not like, here, take this flower vase, mother.
But
I mean, I think this is a really good example of trying to make a celebration not about gifts and failing, because we give gifts. This is what humans do.
We do.
It's inevitable.
It is. And I guess that's just sort of dependent now on how each individual takes it. So
it is. So how do you deal with gift giving?
I mean, I used to, like, this when I was younger and barely had enough money to kind of do the whole gift giving thing, and just kind of had my allowance and various things I'd earned money from,
mm-hmm.
you know, like all the crack cocaine I was selling as a 15-year-old.
It's a good way to get some extra money.
But, you know, at that point, I remember, like, wanting to buy all these gifts, because my sister would go all out and I'd be like, I want to get, you know, mom, like, a nice piece of jewelry or something like that.
Yeah.
And over time, as we've done the whole gift giving thing, I've more become the person of, I'll get each person one or two things, but either something they really want or, you know, really need, or just, like, something kind of sentimental that they'll have for a while and remember, you know, me by, or remember the family by. So I've reduced the amount of gifts, but try to put more effort into each gift
like
and making
that.
It personalized.
And that
overall,
sounds really good. It's mostly just your family, right? And, like...
Yeah, for my friends, I get, you know, we either do... Either like a Secret Santa thing.
Those work really well.
Which, you know, is more convenient. I mean, I like buying gifts, but it's just become like...
It's stressful if you think that you have to give... Or like you get a gift from someone and you didn't get them something.
Oh. Yeah.
Shoot me.
And it just... The atmosphere when you're shopping in a store around the holidays is almost just...
I like it when I'm not looking for something.
Yeah, I like the decorations. I like kind of how happy and cheerful people seem to be. I like all the options, but at the same time, you're like, man, I could theoretically get everything. It's almost too much.
It is too much.
But I don't know. I like it as a supplement to kind of enjoying the holiday time with the people you care about, but I don't like it as a replacement for those interactions and enjoyments. How about you?
Which is sometimes is. I'm the same way. I'm trying to get rid of giving gifts, period. Like, especially physical ones, because I feel like so many of them just, like, are discarded eventually, or it's just a waste, or it's not exactly what they want. Although, like, with close family, like my parents, we basically say, this is what I would like if someone theoretically wanted to get me something, and mm-hmm. then we basically just get them exactly what they ask for. But I like giving experiences, mm-hmm. like a massage, or taking them to, like, the ballet, mm-hmm. or, like, that's what I've done with some close friends and family that, you know, would be fun. And my goal is to just give gifts. My golden standard is this woman that I've known for a couple of years, and she does not give birthday gifts or holiday gifts, but she'll just occasionally treat you to something amazing. And that's what I want to do once I get my act together. And I've been trying to do. It's just like, every now and then, you give someone something. And, like, it doesn't have to be because you feel obligated because of a holiday or, like, you know, it's like you're supposed to give them something. And you give them something when there is something that you really want to give them.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure. That but is it's, a good it's hard because, like, with the holidays, it's like, but I want to buy stuff
You're
now.
Supposed to buy your gifts now.
I know.
That's what everyone else is doing.
It's scary. But, I mean, it's inevitable. And I ran across this really great New York Times piece on the psychology of gift giving, and I thought it was going to be all about, like, how, oh, it's bad for you, da 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 da, but really, they're like, no, don't deny it. Like, you need to give gifts. And several of the psychologists interviewed in the article mentioned how who you choose to give gifts to, like, is a really good reinforcement to you to let you know who's important in your life and who matters. And it also helps to strengthen your perception of the importance of a relationship because, well, I think it's like hindsight bias when you buy something and you're like, oh, I'm so glad I bought that, because really you don't want to feel bad about spending money.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing with relationships. You wouldn't be like, oh, like, he's such a jerk because you just spent all this money on him buying something. So you're more like, yeah, I've always liked him. So it strengthens relationships.
He deserved the snow globe.
He totally deserved it. And because I love him, you know, he's amazing. So it does do weird psychological things to you, but in a positive way. And even though gift giving has always kind of been about reciprocity, we still like to just give things because it makes people feel good. And the study also, I think at the very end, pointed out a study in process about people giving gifts to pets and how they like doing it because pets don't feel, there's not this weird relationship. It just makes them happy.
Yes.
So we do like to do that. It is, you know, it's not always Machiavellian. Sometimes we just like to give because we're cool.
And we care about people.
And we care. So if you're getting stressed out about Christmas shopping now,
please don't.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the idea of Christmas shopping. Yeah. Just
It has an interesting history, so you can think about that. You know, all the weird, like, Saint Nick and Saturnalia, and the Catholic Church hemming and hawing, and all these weird different, like, the strange evolution of Santa Claus. It's interesting. You're part of a 1,000-year-old tradition, more than 1,000 years old.
You are. And then you're only in the, almost at the 200-year mark for the commercialized version.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not that bad. Imagine what it's going to be like in 500
years. In 1,000 years, it'll be flipped. It'll be the gift-giving holidays, and we'll remember that Christmas had something to do with it.
Yeah, something about Santa Claus was some strange idol. But yeah, it's a good thing, and yeah, don't be stressed, have fun, and if you have any suggestions for future podcasts, be they holiday or history related or something different entirely, like about animals or science, or please not math, no math, don't do that. But yeah, send suggestions our way. Our email is podcast@hubpages.com, and I'd like to hear about the best Christmas gift you've ever gotten, because I always wonder if it's like gifts that are things or experiences or...
How about the best gift you ever got?
Tell us the best gift you've ever gotten, and maybe we'll talk about it in our next podcast.
Happy holidays!